Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, tonight, for the first hour, we're going to have open lines. I thought maybe we'd talk a little bit about the battle in Seattle. Why is the battle in Seattle, the demonstrations against the World Trade Organization that were held 6 or 8 years ago, why is that important? Because it's an example of how good people can be misused and manipulated, and how so many of these demonstrations that were held in the past have been a situation where the same people controlled both sides. Now, you have to understand that many of the people who were involved with the battle in Seattle were people who were left-wingers, very concerned about what's going on, this effort to have globalization, certainly transfer American jobs to other countries, to transfer American factories to other countries. This whole idea of globalization will have a deep impact upon the working people here in the United States, and there are a lot of sincere liberals who are very, very concerned about that. And they object, of course, to the World Trade Organization and these various groups that get together, that these groups of elitists, these bankers and corporate heads who get together to plot our future. Now, what most of these people, however, do not understand is that the organizations that they belong to, and I'm talking about the communist movement and all of their subsidiaries, and the socialist movements and all of their subsidiaries, and the environmental movement and all of their subsidiaries, are financed by the very people they oppose. The great tax-exempt foundations, the great corporations. Ted Turner has been instrumental in funding so much of the environmental movement, not only the environmental movement, but the radical arm of the environmental movement that sometimes even borders on the violent. And so it was that a number of people were mobilized to go to Seattle to demonstrate against the large meeting that was being held there, and where they were beginning to talking about the World Trade Organization. Now, they were actually actually welcomed by the mayor of Seattle, who actually had a big party for them the night before. The police had warned the mayor that there were plans for violence and to create riots. And the mayor ordered the police not to intervene. Not to intervene to allow all of these things to go on. Because, you see, they wanted a violent confrontation. What they really loved to see is a situation where you've got the police on one side and the demonstrators on the other. And, of course, they will then have their agitators among the demonstrators. They will infuriate the police, and then the police will begin using their clubs, and then the people on the other side will get angry, and then you'll have your tear gas, and of course, they'll have their professional agitators in, creating acts of violence to justify the police action. This is all a dialectic game. You control both sides. You have a spectacle. And, of course, you actually accomplish exactly what you want. You discredit anybody who objects to the globalization. And so that's exactly what happened. It was that morning, the first morning of the demonstrations, when men dressed in black ninja suits went in and started breaking windows and setting fires. They were professional agitators, and of course there were a lot of demonstrators there who just wanted to demonstrate that they were very unhappy about what was going on. But there were others there, of course, that knew exactly what was going on. They were the professional agitators. They were the ones with the black ninja suits wearing the masks, who were certainly creating a situation that would lead to the confrontation, which became the Battle of Seattle. We'll be back in just a moment here, and we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking about the Battle of Seattle. We actually have a wonderful four-tape set that we put together at that time. It's not very popular today. Most people have forgotten that. just like they've forgotten O.J. Simpson. But all of these are examples of how we manipulate the public, and the true story of O.J. Simpson has never been told. It's told on our four-tape set. You're going to get information there you'll never get elsewhere. And it may very well change your whole outlook on the O.J. Simpson situation. But as far as the battle in Seattle was concerned, why, of course, we had this confrontation. We had, you know, days of rioting. We had parts of downtown Seattle burned. We had, you know, people, you know, who had had their heads broken open, you know, with the batons, and people gassed with tear gas. And this way you turn the demonstrators against the government. You turn the police against the demonstrators. Well, our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But what most people don't understand, this is standard operating procedure. All during the Vietnam War, the anti-war movement was financed by the very people who were financing the Vietnam War, who were encouraging the Vietnam War, who were keeping the Vietnam War going. You always want a controlled opposition. That is so much of what's going on today. In the war on terrorism, you have to have two sides in conflict, one against the other. Oh, we've got the terrible terrorists out there. They hate us. And that's why we have to go to war, of course, with terrorism. We have to go, you know, we're going to have to hate the terrorists because they hate us. After all, they hate us because we're free. Isn't that what the president says? The terrorists hate us because we're free. That's not, of course, what this is all about at all. We have people over there who object to our occupation of their countries, object to our occupation of Afghanistan, object to our occupation of Iraq, and most of the insurgents there have nothing to do with Al-Qaeda, probably far less than 10% of the people who are fighting the United States in Iraq are actually from Al-Qaeda, probably largely financed by our good friends in Pakistan and in Saudi Arabia. But as far as Iraq is concerned, these are people who do not want American occupation of their land. So it is that we saw at the Battle of Seattle, when we saw both sides of the situation being manipulated. One side, of course, pushing the World Trade Organization and then the controlled opposition. And nobody ever found out who the people in the ninja suits were. I hope maybe many of you will go to my website, pull down my article on this. We quote from communist publications and elsewhere about what really happened, a story that you're never going to hear, as the same people control both sides. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and right now we have Mike from Santa Cruz calling. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
You know, we've all been wondering what's next for America after 9/11. I know that's a question you raise a lot. Knowing something's in store for us, and it's not going to be nice. I think I can see something brewing. I don't know if it'll be next. I think that 9/11 is going to lead to massive civil unrest as the public learns more and more about what really happened. And are you still there?
Yes, sir. Something
happened there.
And of course, what you're suggesting, of course, is that we have not been told the truth about what happened that morning, or they certainly concealed from the American people the fact that there were military exercises that morning that simulated hijacking planes, and they were then the military or the CIA or somebody was putting false images up on the screen so that the air traffic controllers and NORAD didn't know what was real and what was false, and even after Flight 11 had crashed into the North Tower, it appeared on the screens there, moving towards towards Washington, D.C. The whole story is told in an excellent article this month in Vanity Fair magazine. If you haven't got it and read it, you need to get it, you need to read it, and it tells you all about how there was an organized effort to confuse the people who were responsible for defending our country. In addition, they had sent most of our military planes, the two wings that were assigned to protect Washington, D.C., had been sent to Canada for military exercises. Now, how was Osama bin Laden smart enough to do that? And how was he able to conceal that fact from the American people all this time? It's only now, 5 years later, become apparent that there were military exercises that morning simulating hijacked planes crashing to American buildings. And I guess Condoleezza Rice didn't know anything about that because she said immediately after the attack, why, who could have ever imagined somebody hijacking planes and using them as weapons? And yet, of course, if you read the new book Without Precedent, written by the co-chairman of the 911 Commission, they will tell you the FAA knew exactly what was going to happen. They knew the planes were going to be hijacked and used as weapons, and did nothing at all to stop the hijacking. Anybody who wants to rock to the pages out of that, we'll get them for you. It comes from the book Without Precedent, just off the presses here. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, picking up on the thread of what you were just saying, in the video 911 Eyewitness, the fellow Rick Siegel did this. He's a small independent filmmaker in New York City. He has something in his that I've never seen anywhere. There was a thing he describes as the tripod emergency war game exercise conducted by FEMA that began on September 10th, right before 9/11. They had helicopters and all kinds of things based at Pier 92 at the Port Authority headquarters. And so it just so happened they were very much on hand for the big day. I hope that's all the truth. I liked the movie. Of course, you know, you never know when you're being fed something wrong.
You have to understand, Mike, that the intelligence agencies, somebody, I don't know who it is putting out a lot of disinformation. They've infiltrated the conservative movement. They are giving us information that isn't right, and then, of course, if you use any of that information, you are immediately discredited. And unfortunately, when you see the hand, somebody pulling things down off the internet, blocking websites, threatening people, as they have Professor Stephen Jones at Brigham Young University, who's come out and said, you know, I cannot believe those buildings came down, you know, simply by themselves. If they had come down as they'd been described, there would have been resistance at every store. The Twin Towers dropped at the rate of gravity. In other words, there was absolutely no resistance from the massive steel infrastructure of the building, and all of that sort of disappeared. How could that steel infrastructure have just been chopped up into little pieces by the pancaking of the floor? So we haven't been get told the story at all, Mike.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's so many new videos coming out all the time. Every time you look on the Google video, for example, and also YouTube and a few others, more and more, you would think that the government could easily shut these down, but they're not.
Okay, Mike, I'm going to have to, would you like to call back a little later? We've got somebody actually calling from Ireland.
Okay.
Okay, but you call back again, good luck.
All right.
Okay, let's go to, is this Michael from Ireland? Hello, is this Michael from Ireland? Who is this? Hello?
This is Paula.
Oh, this is Paula. Paula, will you hang on there, and we'll take Michael from Ireland, and then we'll get back to you. I'm going to put you on hold, and we're going to go to Michael. Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I'm doing fine. What are you doing over there in Ireland?
I live here.
All right, fine. Well, we appreciate you listening to us. And do you have any, what are your thoughts?
Well, I have some comments and maybe a question or two, but about the Seattle...
we call it the Battle at Seattle, right.
The Battle at Seattle. Well, that sort of rang a familiar bell with me because I was in Prague when they had something similar. I think they were demonstrating against globalism there. I don't know if you remember that. It's 2000 or 2001.
They have these spontaneous demonstrations all over the world. Cost, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get the people there. Who puts the money up? Who coordinates it? Who says, we're going to bring 10,000 people to demonstrate against the World Trade Organization or the International Monetary Fund, whatever these meetings are? They finance both sides. They finance the meeting of the people of great wealth, and then they finance the opposition. The controlled opposition is what it's about.
Well, it rang a strange bell to me of something contradictory, but I heard a tape by, I'm sure you've heard of Mr. Kaufman, Michael Kaufman.
Yes, Dr. Kaufman's good friend.
Yes, and he mentioned something to the effect that he thought the strategy of the globalists was that they would incite such riots, feeding them, you know, both sides, financing them, what have you. And they would call, you know, scream to the UN for resolution of it. It was just a strategy for surrendering to the UN. What do you think of that?
I think it could very well be. I think that what they want to do is discredit anybody who opposes them. But you should be well acquainted of this dialectic process. You've seen it in Ireland. The Irish Republican Army, of course I know that's Northern Ireland, but the Irish Republican Army was largely financed by MI6. And you had the number two man in the IRA was a British agent, the chief torturer and murderer, the guy who was the assassin, the killing people who were suspected of being infiltrators into the IRA, was himself a British agent. They create the enemy, and so this is why we have to many times question what's going on. Because often they want a controlled opposition. That's exactly what the British government wanted.
Another question that somewhat relates to that. I met an individual a couple of months ago who is an interpreter at the UN in Geneva, and the person is supposed to be Christian. And I met with her in Geneva, and I felt like trying to explain things, and yet I felt also apprehensive about revealing too much about myself with somebody so closely affiliated with such a nefarious organization.
Mm-hmm.
You think my apprehension is not merited? I should be more bold about it?
I think that you want to be very, very careful, because we're playing a dangerous game. And believe me, the conservative movement, the Christian movement, the Republican movement, the Democratic movement, they have their agents every place watching and reporting back to the government.
It's best not to reveal oneself too much to somebody like that, isn't
it? That's right. Yeah, sometimes you do not want to say too much. Okay, anything else, Michael?
One other thing. I wonder if it's sometime possible to speak to you or to somebody there about practical things relating to, like, the Bucky filter and what have you, and various
things. You can just call any time during the daytime, our 800 number, and we'll be glad to talk to you. But don't call tomorrow. I won't be here, but I will be here Friday, and I'll be here all next week.
But I'd like to talk to you maybe privately, because there's things I would like to ask that I wouldn't like broadcast.
No, it would not be on the radio. Just call, and I remember the differential in time, but I do a program at 7 o'clock every morning, and then I'll be free after that.
Okay.
Bye-bye, and God bless. Well, good to hear
all
from
right,
you.
Thank you.
Well, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Paula, who's patiently waiting on the line. Hi, Paula. Did you have a question or comment? This is Paula from Florida.
All this talk we've been hearing about that somebody wants to wipe Israel off the map, okay? Well, I can now understand why. And we had some mistranslations in the Bible, which I just got this, and it's been, my family genealogy said the same thing. We helped decipher the Bible for James. But anyway, we found out that at the time of Adam and Eve, we weren't the first here. But anyway, Cain and Abel were born twins. And the children of Satan come from these two boys, but Seth is ours. Okay, that's our bloodline. And the thing is that the Edomites and the Jews come from these two, Abel and Cain.
I see. Well, of course, this is your opinion, Paula.
No.
What you are suggesting is that the Jewish people are satanic. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, they said the Edomites, we were taken out of Jerusalem, and we were taken to Babylon. The Edomites came in, and the Jews were there. We're the Israelites. It's two different bloodlines.
I see. Okay, fine. Well,
and, I mean, this comes actually from the Kingdom Identity Ministries.
From what ministry?
It came from the Kingdom Identity Ministries in Harrison, Arkansas. But anyway, the Bible was mistranslated in a lot of the words, the Hebrew words, because my family helped do this themselves.
Thank you, thank you so very much for calling, Paula, and we're going to have to go to a break. But thanks so much for calling.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mike is good enough to call back again. Go ahead, Mike. What was it you wanted to say there?
Yeah, I think that that more and more of the truth is going to come out. It is coming out.
You're talking about with 911.
Yeah, and I believe that the government could very well be facilitating this to the extent of actually doing basically what they did in Seattle. We'll have state-sponsored demonstrations against the state for the benefit of the state.
Well, remember, now, when we refer to the government, we have to be very careful. A lot of good people in the government. I mean, certainly the structure of government laid out by our Constitution is great. It is simply because there's an evil group that has taken control of our government and is certainly working within certain intelligence agencies and within military and these are the evil people, not the government as a whole, but that what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness component within the government.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Enough. Well, let's look again back at the World Trade Organization and the battle in Seattle. One of the things I understand about how that worked was, like you were saying earlier, interestingly, that the whole thing was orchestrated by the same interests, let's just say, as those who run the WTO. And prior to the battle in Seattle, the WTO was an organization that was barely heard of or known of by anybody in the general public. I think that it some of those terms, the names of these organizations, when NAFTA was coming into being and that whole debate was swirling around, then WTO was somewhere in the background of all that. But as a result of the battle in Seattle, everybody all of a sudden knew about the WTO. They were in the news every night. And people had to choose. Now, here we have the dialectic coming into play. People had to choose if they were going to side with the demonstrators or the WTO. And then all of a sudden, the WTO had a huge popular base that they had never had before, and it would have taken them 30 years.
Well, wasn't that very clever? Isn't it wonderful when you're able to manipulate both sides, having controlled opposition, and even though you're totally corrupt and about to destroy our country, you look good because you've got good press because those guys on the other side are so terrible.
Yeah. So I think we're seeing the same thing shaping up now. When we have from 911 and something similar now is forming up in the American public, when we have something like 40 and 41% in these surveys, 40 and 41% coming into they're having a major question about the government story as to what happened on 911, and so now, everything went so perfectly that day for them. Everything was so exquisitely planned. But can you really think that they would ever, that they would think that we wouldn't notice the way Building 7 came down? Or you know, thinking it through a little further about the towers. I thought myself that when I first saw the towers come down, I knew that was controlled demolition.
Well, the thing is that they fell at the speed of gravity, and through the massive steel infrastructure, that would have slowed the descent, unless, of course, there was some means of disrupting those towers. And we don't know what actually happened, but we do know that Building 7, and anybody can watch that on the Internet, pulled in Building 7 videos, you can see them. And if you look at them a few times, you'll realize that that is an example of a controlled demolition. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And so, Mike, I certainly think we have to try to get people to understand that it doesn't do any good to get out in the streets and demonstrate. What we need is to educate the vast majority of the American people. Until the American people understand what's going on, massive demonstrations will simply turn people, against those people who are trying to bring out what happened. I think we need a scholarly, intelligent approach, such as we saw demonstrated with Professor Stephen Jones, who has been, of course, put on administrative leave by Brigham Young University. I suspect somebody put pressure on them and told him to silence him. I've seen this happen over and over again. However, he may be lucky because I've had several people on my programs who have been, who have been suicided or died very mysterious deaths, after exposing what's going on. So I think we should all pray for Professor Stephen Jones, who is part of this the scholars for 911 and 911 scholars, about 75 professors who are saying, look, if you look at what happened that day, it doesn't make sense. And what we need to do, of course, nobody's come forward other than the high CIA official, and he's quoted a book we carry entitled A Scene of Evil. He's quoted by Robert Baer, a CIA agent, and this highest of the CIA officials says, and anybody would like to read the book, we have it, when the dust finally clears, the American people will realize that 911 was not an intelligence failure. It was a triumph. When the dust finally clears, the American people will realize that 911 was not an intelligence failure. It was a triumph. Well, I think there's only one way to interpret that. They wanted to get us into the war in the Middle East. We got into the war in the Middle East, and I fear that war is going to expand. Anything else you'd like to cover, Mike?
Well, I look at different things like the psychology that was implemented upon us that day. When first they crashed one airplane into the towers, and that got the world's attention, it was a clear blue sky day when everybody everywhere could have easy viewing of things. And everybody was so amazed. Now, it had happened before with the Empire State Building, and every here and there over the years, an airplane crashed into a building. So now this was a momentous event. And then, after half an hour, they crash another one. We all know the chills that went through our bodies when we knew that happened.
But of course, the thing is, immediately they told us it was the terrorist, it was the wicked Osama bin Laden. Yeah. Nobody ever mentioned that Osama bin Laden had been financed by the United States government all during the Soviet War, the Afghan War in the 1980s. So, and nobody ever mentioned that his assistant, al-Zawahiri, had been allowed to come to America in 1995 to raise funds for al-Qaeda. And anybody who doubts that, we actually have the articles out of the paper for it. So why would we let the number two man, a man who's wanted for murder, his name is al-Zawahiri, why would we let him come to the United States and raise funds for the wicked al-Qaeda when they were already implicated in the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993? No, there are lots of unanswered questions, Mike. Anything else you'd like to say?
One more thing. Everything was so... They did such a bang-up job on us that day. Everything was so exquisitely planned. My question is, did they also calculate how long before the American public woke up?
We don't know what we... not about to tell us.
Yeah, we won't know, but we can certainly look at things. And they left a few choice numbers in it all just to lead us on, like I was saying before about Building 7. They just left that one right there in front of us.
I think they really made a mistake in taking down Building 7, because you could argue about the Twin Towers, but if you look at Building 7, and we're told all the reason it went down is because some of the wreckage from the Twin Towers fell on the top of the building. But the building did not just come down from the top. The basement of the building simply collapsed, and it came down into its own footprint.
It just came down.
So the thing is that what they did, they never should have. First of all, they never should have taken the building down. They never should have allowed pictures of it to be taken. Yeah. And they never should have allowed Larry Silverstein to go on television and talk about the fact that he ordered the pulling of the building, whatever that means.
Well, it came down way too neatly.
Right.
And they have since gotten compliments from demolitions experts around the country on what a good job they did.
All right, well, I share your concern, Mike.
Yep.
Our job is to get people to think and to question. And I ask anybody who's skeptical, go up on the Internet, type, Google in 911, Building 7 videos, and then watch and see. Are you going to believe your lying eyes? Are you going to believe the government? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and first this is our open lines evening, and we've got Evelyn calling from Massachusetts. Hi, Evelyn. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Doctor?
I'm doing just great. It's good to have you with us.
I wish I could be there in October, but it's too far away, but I would have loved to have been there. Doctor, you can't. I know you don't watch TV, but Jimmy Carter was on Larry King Live tonight for an hour.
Right.
And he spoke so beautiful, and it was really uplifting to the American people to hear a sane person talk. You know, you could tell he thinks and he's concerned about everything, you know, not just himself and what he wants to present. He really spoke beautiful, but he did say about the vice president that he has lied to the American people so much, so he doesn't take any stock in what the vice president says, you know, on the air now. And he said because he lied so much to the American people.
He's referring to, of course,
the vice president.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think really my personal opinion is that Dick Cheney is the brains behind what's
sure.
going on. In fact, George Bush refused to appear before the 9-1-1 commission unless Dick Cheney was there to
yep.
hold his hand.
Yep, right.
And it's time and time again.
So sad, isn't it?
I know it really is. In fact, I hate to say this, but sometimes you'll see more truth in Saturday Night Live than you will on ABC, CBS News.
Well, you know,
often they will put on their skits, and they'll have, you know, George Bush sitting on Dick Cheney's lap. Or, you know, of course, he's going to Dick Cheney to find out what he's supposed to say. And it's a tragic thing when we see this parody, but it's even more tragic when we see our president.
I know.
And how this man ever got elected president, well,
I don't believe he was elected, Dr. Stan. I just will never believe that man was elected, honestly. So that's my opinion, though.
Well, I'll tell you what, he has an awful lot of good people in this country who
well,
back him
unfortunately.
Because, of course, he professes to be a born-again Christian, but
well,
I don't know how a born-again Christian can support torture.
No, you got to look at the deeds, not the. Anybody can say with their mouth, I'm this, I'm that.
Right.
There's going to be a day when they're going to stand before the Lord and he's going to say, go on, I never knew you.
Well, so, I mean, all going to stand there, right?
Unenlightened Christian people are being fooled by this man.
Well,
and
I
that's
think
bad.
Our job is to try to get people to think, not to insult them, because
right.
they're good people. I'm a,
right.
A lot of my best friends are fully support the president.
That's right.
But I think we just have to try to get them to think by asking questions.
Use the gray matter, right?
Right.
Anyway, okay,
I wish you could come to our conference. Maybe one of these times you'll
I
be
I send
here.
My little check today for my newsletter. I can't wait to get it.
God bless you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Doc.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, again, our telephone number. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I think you can see the dialectic moving in here now as we find that the conservative movement and the 911 truth movement, I'm sure, has been infiltrated. We see people putting out false information all the time. One of the stories is that the man who was responsible for the research on the in the Popper Mechanics story or debunking of the of this 911 the truth movement, it was a man named Chertoff, and he was supposedly a nephew of Michael Chertoff, who is, of course, the works in Homeland Security. And then it turns out, of course, that the basis for that story was an interview with some woman who professed to be the mother of this young man who had written the article in Popular Mechanics. But the truth of the matter is that when this gentleman was asked, he said he'd never heard of Michael Chertoff. He's not a relative at all. And so the people who have actually picked up on that story have discredited themselves. And there is so much information, false information, up on the Internet. And this is why you have to really check your sources and make sure that they're absolutely accurate. And I will tell you, and I've been told this by other people I really trust, like Joel Scouse and others, that they're constantly besieged by people who are giving them false information. Oh, we've got this information. You know, we work for government at the highest levels, and here's the true story. But they're plants. They're planted there to actually discredit you. And when you begin to find out that somebody has been going up on the Internet and removing articles, and so many of the articles about what happened on 9/11 have just disappeared from the Internet. For instance, on September 11th, 2001, one of my friends went up on the Internet and pulled down an article that came from, I believe, the Northwest Airlines hostesses or airline stewardesses website. It was written by a man named Bill Gertz, who works for the Washington Times, and it was all about something called Operation Bojinka. And Operation Bojinka, and people will argue whether this is the right name or the wrong name, had really two parts. One was blow up about 10 American airplanes over the Pacific simultaneously, but the second part of that was to hijack American planes and crash them into the Pentagon, into the World Trade Center, into the, I believe it was the White House, but certainly it was the Sears Tower in Chicago and the Transamerica building in San Francisco. And that was what Bill Gertz called Operation Bojinka. And, of course, that was there. It posted, it was either June or July of 2001, either 2 or 3 months before the 9/11 attack. Well, the article immediately disappeared from the Internet. We have the only copy of it that I know of, and we'd be glad to send any of our listeners a copy of it, but why did they take that down off the Internet? And then why, when I talked to Mr. Gertz, and when we were interviewing one day, I congratulated him on the article, he had no memory of ever writing the article that we have the copy of. It's sort of like the story that of the Mayor Woody Brown of San Francisco, who was told the night before the 9/11 attack that he should not fly the following day. Well, the article was printed on the 12th of September in the early morning edition of the San Francisco Chronicle, but for some reason it only appeared in that one edition. All the other editions of the Chronicle for that day had a picture of a hippopotamus on that page, and that article simply disappeared down the memory hole. Furthermore, the article disappeared off the Internet, if it was ever up there. I mean, almost every article in the newspapers goes up on the Internet, but this one either never was put up or disappeared off the Internet. We know, for instance, that I think it was September the 5th, an article appeared in the, I believe it was the London Times. We have the article that was where Salman Rushdie, remember Salman Rushdie had written a book that was certainly had to do with the Quran, and it was critical of Muhammad and the Quran. So somebody had put a contract out on his life. And so he was actually living in secrecy over in Great Britain. But Salman Rushdie had come forward and said that he had been told not to fly on American or Canadian commercial planes. He had been contacted and advised not to fly on American and commercial planes, about the 5th of September. But the article disappeared off the Internet. So, you know, how here in the United States are we going to get copies of the London newspapers? And whether it was the Times or another newspaper, you'll have to go to my article, which covers this. I believe it's by the September 2001 newsletter, because we actually were able to track the article down. We know it was written. We know it was accurate. But somebody has the ability to go on the Internet and remove articles. Now, who would have that ability? You have to have an awful lot of power to be able to interfere with and censor the Internet. And when you begin seeing over and over again this effort to conceal information, you know that we are not being told the truth. Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. And again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, this is Wednesday Open Lines or Open Lines Wednesday. Hi, Ray. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. You know, I've been thinking about 9/11, and, it seems to me it's what they call a black op, a black operation probably done by some government agency. I don't know. I can't blame the CIA, or anybody in particular, but I know it had to be somebody very powerful and very, that are able to do that whole thing, set up the whole thing the way it worked. It just seems like a massive plot, carried out by some kind of agency, and probably not the KGB. Probably not. Why would they benefit from from doing something like that?
Well, of course, there are a lot of alternative stories that are put out there, and they've planted a lot of information to mislead it. There's a lot of information that suggests this was the Saudi Arabians. After all, 15 of the 19 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia. So did we know that Saudi Arabia was giving all these visas to all these people who shouldn't be here? Two of the hijackers and living in San Diego were financed by the wife of the Saudi ambassador to the United States. We know that the Saudis were allowed to leave America immediately after the 9-1-1 attack. We know that there was the Joint Intelligence Committee report, which investigated the 9-1-1 tragedy in 2002, and put forward a report in 2003. And then the Bush administration removed 28 pages of information dealing with Saudi Arabia's involvement. And when they published the report, they published 28 empty pages to draw attention to that. Now, why did they do that? To make us think that maybe Saudi Arabia was involved.
Yeah.
The whole idea, Ray, is they're playing games with our mind.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, then there's a story it was the Mossad, and they've got all the stories that suggest it was the Mossad, and other stories that suggest it was the Pakistanis. And then there's the theory, well, we knew the attack was coming, but we didn't try to stop it. See, that's a terrible thing. But even more frightening is, there had to be explosive charges in Building 7 because it came down from the bottom. And I just ask anybody who questions what happens that day to go onto the Internet and Google in Building Number 7 video and watch the plane, that building come down, and there is no question this was a controlled demolition.
And
I don't think Osama bin Laden had his agents in there putting the explosives in.
And of course, they planted false information all over the place so that they could mislead people into thinking that it was, well, you know, somebody else other than who it was. But I believe that I would bet my life that it was something like the CIA or somebody like them.
Remember, we have 14 intelligence agencies.
Well,
nobody in Congress, nobody in the Senate.
No, they have no judicial oversight.
Right, go ahead.
There's no judicial oversight. There's no knowing what they do and what the money is spent for, the money that they use, what they use it for.
No, because what's really so funny is that, you know who the man was in the House of Representatives in Congress who was supposed to be in charge of oversight of the CIA? His name was Representative Porter Goss, a lifelong member of the CIA who eventually was appointed director of the CIA after Robert Tenet left. Isn't that interesting? He's the one who's supposed to monitor the CIA. Well, that's just like asking the fox to monitor the hen house.
I think the NSA is more disturbing, I think, than the CIA.
No, I think that they're all disturbing. They are actually collecting dossiers on American citizens. They have been for many years. They have informants out here. Because, you see, they do not want anybody, of course, to let the American people understand that there are people within our government who hate America. Their dedication is to this idea of creating a one-world government, and they are traitors to our country.
Yeah, and they'll remain to be traitors, and probably when God sends them to hell or wherever.
Amen. Anything else?
Okay, that's it.
God bless. Thanks very much. Well, again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And there are really so many unanswered questions. I mean, one of the biggest unanswered questions is the passports. And those who know the story of the passports. And, of course, you'll find this in the 911 Commission report. You'll find this mentioned in the book recently written by Thomas Keene, who was the chairman of the 911 Commission, and by Lee Hamilton, who was the vice chairman. And they tell about the passports. And one of them, supposedly was in the pocket of one of the hijackers who was in the plane that crashed into the North Tower. And somehow, by some miraculous circumstances, that passport got out of his pocket, out of the hijacker's pocket, got out of the flaming wreckage of the plane he was in, got out of the flaming wreckage of the North Tower, and floated gently down to the ground, and was found lying on the sidewalk a block and a half away from the North Tower, and was picked up by a passerby and turned into the police. And so that's how we know that the hijacker was on that plane. Now, I want to ask you, perfectly logically, do you honestly believe that story, or would you be more prone to believe that somebody had planted that passport? And if somebody planted the passport with the name of somebody who was supposed to be in the plane that crashed into the North Tower, then this was an intelligence operation. But if that isn't enough for you, there was another passport. It was sort of a partially singed, partially burned. And this was another hijacker's passport that got out of the pocket of one of the hijackers on Flight 93 over Pennsylvania, and then got out of the flaming wreckage of the, and was found adjacent to the crash site in Pennsylvania. And that a passport was actually shown on the FBI website for a few days, but they took it down, and I suspect they took it down because that story is just so preposterous. You wonder how anybody could possibly believe it. Those two passports, I think, tend to put to a lie the whole government story. There is no way that two passports could have survived the flaming wreckage and nobody else's. Well, actually, they did say that there were two other passports of two of the other hijackers they were able to get. One of them was in the luggage, and that could, but I mean, you would think if you travel, how many people put your passport in your luggage? Most people put their passport in in their pocket when they're traveling. They don't put their passport in their luggage. And where the fourth passport came from, that was either the most miraculous thing or, of course, all of those passports were planted to preserve the myth. And that is the government's conspiracy theory. And it is a conspiracy theory. The government's conspiracy theory is that 19 hijackers came into the United States and conspired to hijack four planes and crash them into the North Tower, the South Tower, into the Pentagon, and of course the fourth one was flying to Washington, D.C., and was going to, of course, crash into something there. That is the government's conspiracy theory. I don't think it's certainly any more plausible than many of the other conspiracy theories. Let's go to John, who's calling from Palm Springs. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Listen, a certain number of people are cognizant and believing in the 9/11 truth facts about the government conspiracy. But my question to you is, what would be your suggestion how to disseminate this information more widely at this time?
Well, I think you have to realize, of course, the media in America is pretty well controlled. Fortunately, we do have some alternative radio, and of course we have the internet, and the internet is the best way to get the information out. That and what some of the far left is doing, and the far left is organized groups, and they're showing the movie Loose Chains all across America. It was shown here in Santa Cruz on September 11th. There was sellout crowds in one of the theaters. There was standing room only, and probably a lot of people didn't get in. We need to get people to see these videos. I suggest specifically Loose Chains. There might be one or two things I would disagree with, but we need to get people to watch those pictures to go down. And I tell them, look, go up on the internet, Google in Building Number 7 video, and you'll see several sites that have multiple pictures of Building 7 coming down. And you've watched that a few times, and there will be no question in your mind what happened that day. Ask them to watch it and try to explain what happened. And either you believe the government explanation that wreckage fell onto the roof, and that's why the basement of the building exploded.
Right. So you actually feel that it's pretty much happening a pace, so to speak.
I think it is the most exciting thing I have seen in the 44 years I've been here. Over 41% at the last count of the American people don't believe the government story. That is amazing. And I think the number is growing, and we have to be very patient with the people who cannot see the forest for the trees, and in their heart they do not want to believe anything could be that evil. And so I say to them, well, you know, do you believe, for instance, that they can cover up the fact that we abandoned 20,000 American soldiers and left them to die in Siberia after the Second World War? And, of course, we have the report of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, totally suppressed in America. I mean, did you ever hear of Operation Keelhaul, where at the end of the Second World War, United States and and our allies in Europe sent almost 6 million Russians back to Russia, where 2 million were immediately killed, 2 million were sent to Siberia to be worked to death, and 2 million were to be among the living dead. They could never have a job in Russia. We sent them back. Some of them were in the United States, and we sent them back to die. How could you cover up something like Operation Heal Hall? How could you cover up, as they did during the 30s, the starving to death of 7 million Ukrainians? How could you cover up the Great Hunger in China between 1958 and 1962? And you can Google this in the Great Hunger or famine in China, 58 to 62, where between 30 and, actually the government figures are, 41 to 43 million Chinese were starved to death by the Chinese Communist government. You would have to have tremendous control over the media to conceal something like that.
What about the German Nazis that worked on the Manhattan Project?
Sure, you're talking about Operation Paperclip, right? And there were 10,000 Nazis we helped to escape to South America. That's all covered in Operation Paperclip. In fact, we have a four-tape set on that with the author of the book, Secret Agenda. Hold that thought. Well, John, go ahead. Certainly, there's so many things out here that have been concealed. What we need is to bring them up and to try to get people to start thinking. And I believe that if you do this in a calm, quiet manner, instead of grabbing people by the lapel and shaking them and saying, don't you know, people will listen. Ask them more questions. Did you ever hear about the Great Hunger in China? How could it be that they could suppress that sort of information in America? Do you think that maybe the media is controlled? Is that why all of the major media supports the government conspiracy theory and attacks anybody who opposes it? Why was Professor Stephen Jones of Brigham Young University put on administrative leave? Because he spoke out on what had happened. Who put the pressure on Brigham Young University to silence him? And who else have they tried to silence? You see, we start asking questions, and I think there's a growing awareness all across America something is seriously wrong. And if people could simply see some of the things that are up on Alex Jones' website, certainly I think the American Scholar Symposium that was broadcast 3 times on C-SPAN woke up an awful lot of people when they found out about the military exercises that were held that morning that simulated the hijacking of American airliners and crashing them into buildings. And how did you suppress that information for 5 years from the American people? And as I've said before, that is covered very well in an excellent article, certainly in Vanity Fair magazine for September, the September issue of Vanity Fair. And, of course, the author of the article says, I don't believe in a conspiracy. But you read his article and you read between the lines, how else do you explain the fact that there were all sorts of simulated images up there on the radar screens to confuse the air traffic controller and to confuse the people at NORAD. And long after the flight, American Flight 11, had crashed into the North Tower, it was sending messages to those screens as it flew towards Washington, D.C. How could that have happened unintentionally? I think we've got a lot going for us, John. Don't get discouraged. You just hang in there and encourage people to listen and get educated. I guess we lost John. Well, we're just about out of time anyway. And so I hope you enjoy our open lines on Wednesday. We're going to try to do this as long as people enjoy it and give us calls. And we've had people from all across the country calling us, and even from Ireland, Michael over in Ireland, who I know has been listening to us for some time because he's sent me some emails. It's always good to hear from people throughout the world who listen. But our major battle is here at home, because the future of Christian civilization rests on the American people. Do enough of them care about freedom to become involved in this time in history? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is predominantly listener-supported, and we really, of course, depend upon those of you who listen to our programs who can afford to help us. And, of course, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, you get our monthly newsletter, you get our 4 best tapes of the month, or 4 best CDs. But more than that, you're helping support our network out across America. And then, of course, we want to remind everybody that on the 29th of October, we're having our annual seminar. It's going to be at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. It's going to be a Sunday. It's going to be all day long. We're going to have Constance Cumby and Chris Pinto and other speakers, and we're going to be serving lunch. So you have to make your reservations ahead of time. And if you want to come from outside the area, we have a block of rooms at the Sea Cliff Inn, but at a reduced rate, but we've only got about till the 28th of September. If you haven't got a room by then, you're going to have to pay the full fare. So we hope to hope many of you come. We're pleased by the response we've got so far. Everybody has had a good time in the past, and hopefully you'll want to come again. That's the 29th of October, and give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you would like, of course, to make reservations for yourself and your friends, and I think you'll have a good time. I have a feeling every time we have one of these seminars, and they're exhausting for me and for my wife and for our staff, and but at the end of the day, nobody wants to go home. We have to, of course, leave because there's usually something else in the evening, but nobody wants to go home. And it's just great to know that there are people out there totally dedicated to getting the truth out. And, of course, incidentally, we have a great video from our last seminar by Dr. Ayoub going into how they're poisoning the minds of our children by insisting that mothers take, during the first trimester of pregnancy, pregnant women, take an influenza shot where they get a full dose of mercury that concentrates in the minds of their brain, the minds of their children. Have you noticed all the stories recently about how our seniors, when they graduate from high school, so many of them are illiterate and they really can't think, and a lot of this is because they've intentionally destroyed their brains. You need to get our material on autism. We have a 4-tape set on autism. We have a 4-tape set on mercury. Actually, we have 2 4-tape sets on mercury. We have a DVD on mercury. It's called Without Informed Consent. You know, the fillings, there's been a lot of material recently coming out saying mercury fillings are perfectly safe, but maybe we ought to do some more investigation. Let me tell you, over in Sweden, they won't allow a dentist to put a mercury filling in. In fact, they pay to get them taken out. In Sweden, they pay to get them taken out because they've studied this. They know the relationship to Alzheimer's disease. Why is Alzheimer's disease increasing so rapidly here in America? Because if you take your influenza shots, as your doctor tells you, 3 to 4 shots over a 5-year period, you're between 60 and 65. 10 years later, your incidence of Alzheimer's goes up 1,000%. That's Dr. Fudenberg's work. If you'd like to verify that, you can call us, or we'll be glad to send you the page of the abstract from his website. Dr. Fudenberg's work, 1,000%. They know what they're doing. They want to destroy our people, and they're doing a good job. There really are evil people out there. They're doing the same thing with the fluoride. They're doing it with the NutraSweet. They know the impact on the brains. And look at so many of our children when they graduate from high school. Why they simply can't function. And as Bertrand Russell said in his book, The Impact of Science on Society, by the use of diet, injections, and injunctions, we'll be able to mold the minds of our people so they'll have this outlook that the authorities want, and any opposition will be unthinkable. By diet, injections, and injunctions. I wonder what Bertrand Russell do that most people don't know. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You can get our material on aspartame and NutraSweet, on fluoride, that's the Hidden Agenda syllabus and video, syllabus and video or DVD. The material we have on mercury, it's so much material available from Radio Liberty. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, and our enemy is organized evil. And don't even think about changing the dial. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stanback here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being until, we ask for them. Hopefully we're going to have Paul Walter on the line, and Paul came from behind the Iron Curtain. He lived under tyranny. You'd never know it to hear him talk. He talked just like an American, but he came from a country where there was no freedom. He came to America and established a business, but now he has one of the most successful websites on the Internet. It's called newswithviews.com, and News with Views gets almost a million hits every single day. And they have great speakers there. They have all sorts of great articles up there. And certainly we peruse the articles that they present every single day. You can get on their email, and they'll actually email them to you, and you can open them up and look at them. And some of them I read, some of them I don't read. Certainly there's certain people I always read. Chuck Baldwin, certainly Nancy Levant, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, Frosty Wooldridge, half a dozen that I wouldn't think of not reading. I'd feel guilty if I didn't read other articles, and then sometimes I don't read them. But you have the access to great information there, and he has great articles. And here's something one man can do, and Paul and Lorraine Walter, of course, have this website up there. They've developed themselves, and a million Americans go to their website every single day. But this evening we're going to be talking about a book that Paul has re-released. It's called The Coming Battle. Now, it was written back in 1899 by Mr. Wahlberg, who had been born before the Civil War, who was observing what was happening to the financial situation and the monetary control, the banker's control of our destiny in 1899. We're talking about 107 years ago. But the book is as valid today as when it was written. Paul, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Thank you very much for having me on, Stan. I appreciate it.
Well, we wanted to let people know about that book. We carry the book. We think it's an important book. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about how you found the book and, of course, what this book tells that is so important for today?
How we found the book is my son-in-law found it at a garage sale. Someone had an old attic somewhere, I guess, and they found this old book, and it was in a garage sale, and Paul picked it up, and he couldn't believe what he was reading. He gave it to me, and I couldn't believe what I was reading, so we decided to republish it, and this is our seventh printing now, I believe. And really what this book contains is a complete blueprint of destruction of America. And it talks about how Napoleon III tried to unite Europe under a common currency. What's today? Uniting Europe under a common currency. So this was written, don't forget now, by a man who was born before the Civil War. So this is nothing new. This is one world global government. They tried this for hundreds of years. And I think they're going to succeed this time. They manage to dumb enough and people down.
Of course, that's what they want to do here in North America. They want to, of course, unite all of North America. And they want a common currency for North America. In fact, they've even named it. It's called the Amero. Isn't that interesting?
Yep.
You go right ahead, and I'll let you know. Well, we're just about out of time for this segment, but we're going to be, when we get back, of course, we're going to be talking with Paul Walter about the book, The Coming Battle. You see, the stability of a nation is dependent upon the stability of the currency, and those who control the currency control the destiny of a nation. And unfortunately, there are people who control our monetary system and our banking system who have a different agenda. Because they worship a different god. Has nothing to do with race, but of course it does have a great deal to do with integrity. Well, Paul, why don't you go ahead and pick the story up there about what Mr. Wahlberg was telling back in 1899.
okay? So, excuse me, when we found this book, I mean, there were so many things in this book that I mean, I don't know if I can cover it all, but I'll tell you some of the pertinent ones.
You go right ahead.
Is how the influential universities and colleges and seminary schools were infiltrated.
Now, this was 100 years ago.
Yeah, back in the 1800s.
And that infiltrated our seminaries to neutralize the church.
That's
and
right.
And this continues to this very day.
They have to neutralize the church, water down the doctrine, the gospel, so to speak, and give people, you know, so and everyone is in church with rose-colored glasses on, shaking hands, loving everybody, and the truth is out the window, repentance is out the window. If you speak the truth, you're making people feel bad, political correctness is in, the truth is out the window. And that's really the doctrine that we have, excuse me, in church today. It talks about how silver was demonetized. It talks about how commodities market are manipulated, how your stock market is manipulated, how the money that we used to have, as we just gold and silver for our money, was basically didn't pass through the toll gates of these banksters, and how they demonetized silver and created one of the largest depressions that ever hit the country up to that time, which was during the President Grant administration, which it was from early 1870s, that lasted for 5 years. It covers all that. It documents all that. It talks about how they created starvation in a land of plenty, and then they blamed it on farmers for overproducing food. And people bought that lie, too, then, and Mr. Walbert basically said, and he's a very honest man, he says people are gullible. They'll believe anything you tell them. And, you know, there's a lot of truth to that even today. And I do know this. If you don't smoke the people, and if you tell them the truth, 99% of the time they will make the right decision because they will not go against their own best interest. The problem is people have been lied to. They've been lied to by the paper. Speaking about the paper, Mr. Walbert goes into great detail as well, how your influential and large newspapers in the country that existed in that time were infiltrated as well.
And of course today, right, they have even more control over the media. They control the television networks. They control the radio networks. They control all of the major news magazines. I can think maybe one or two exceptions. As a result of that, they control what the American people believe. We'll be right back with Paul. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Paul Walter. We're talking about a book that Paul has republished. He and Lorraine have published the book, The Coming Battle, and we actually carry it out here at Radio Liberty because we think it's a very important book, and we want people to really understand about the story that was told 107 years ago. About, you know, what was happening to our money, and Paul mentioned about demonetizing silver. You see, the whole idea of money, and it has been since its very inception going back thousands of years, was to have something that was of intrinsic value so you could not expand the quantity of money, because when you expand the quantity of money, why, of course, you tend to devalue the currency. And when you're using a fiat money system, you create tremendous initial prosperity. But eventually, the system always collapses and impoverishes the people, and that is exactly what they're planning today. That's why the Bush administration has run up the greatest deficit of all history. And, you know, it's so interesting. If you read the papers, they will tell you, oh, well, of course, the deficit is down this year. It's down to about $313 billion because, oh, we're taking so much more money in because of the tax cuts, and so the government's taking in more money, which is really true. But it's a half-truth. And the truth of the matter is, they may be taking in more money, but they're spending far more than ever before. And so that $313 billion doesn't include any of the off-budget items for, say, for the war in Iraq, for the funding of Katrina and New Orleans. Doesn't include the money that we've stolen from Social Security and Medicare. The money, more money is coming in that's going out. But we should be establishing a trust fund. The money is all stolen, and we put in there an IOU. So the true deficit this year is close to $700 billion. How could they say 313? And it's really almost 700 billion. I think it's about 690 billion. They simply lie. And as long as you control the media, you can lie about anything, and the people will believe, because it really doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you repeat it over and over again, they're going to believe. And our job is to get the truth out, isn't it, Paul?
That's right. Now, if they bankrupted the Social Security, and they can spend $450 billion funding Iraq, how come they can't save the Social Security then? I mean, here they are. You know what? Speaking about Iran, what you just mentioned a little while ago, Iraq, I mean, our newspaper had an AP story on the front today. We're just sitting here looking at all, my wife and I, and we couldn't believe what we were watching. There's a picture up front of the Iranian president from Iran shaking hands and embracing the Iraqi president that the United States has installed in Iraq. I thought Iran is a nation that is dangerous. They're axis of evil. They are working on a nuclear bomb. They want to eliminate Israel. And they're basically one of the worst nations that is the funding of terrorists. And here he is in Iran, in Iraq, embracing the new president that the United States just installed in Iraq. And there are troops there dying for this country to establish democracy there, I guess, so to speak. Right. And anyway, and here he is, the president of a country that's sponsoring terrorism in the whole Middle East, embracing this guy. Does this make any sense to you?
Well, there are very, very few things that make any sense today. And if you understand that, then everything makes sense. None of this makes sense unless you understand that it is all make-believe. Certainly, Ahmadinejad certainly almost looks like he came from central casting someplace. He looks like a made-up character.
Exactly.
And he says all of these stupid things. But, you know, the most interesting thing, Paul, you know, here we have elections coming up in November. Now, price of oil has been going up. It was phenomenally up, $72, $73 a barrel.
It's going down now just before the election,
why the price of oil is going down. We've been having, of course, arguments with Iran. We're talking about sanctions on Iran, and suddenly Iran makes a concession and says for 8 weeks we will, of course, stop enriching, or we may stop enriching our uranium, and then, of course, we can have our talks. Well, 8 weeks will get us through the election. Isn't that nice of those wicked Iranians to help George Bush get reelected? And did you see what happened to the stock market today? For no intelligent, logical reason, the stock market got up over 11,500 today. But they're playing games with our mind so that everything looks fine going into the election. When you understand they're playing games with our reality, then everything makes sense. Otherwise, of course, it all defies logic.
You know what? That's exactly right. The whole thing is a sham. It's like you said. Once you grasp the reality of all this, it's no longer a shock. You can see the whole thing is, it's like playing a shell game where you got these shells and you got a marble on one of the shells and you're sitting there shuffling it back and forth, and the marble falls through that little hole in the table, and you think marble is still on one of the shells and it isn't there at all. The whole thing is a lie. that's basically the seed in the world today. And it's like you said, Osama bin Laden, I don't know if he died or not, but if he died, they had to keep him alive because he's the one that this war on terror is going on. That's how easy it is to fool the masses. And the coming battle basically talks about this. You read Mr. Walberg's book, throughout the whole book tells you how the masses are fooled and different institutions in our country have been infiltrated. It talks about how our treasury has been raided of all the gold and silver and shipped to Europe. They shipped all our wealth to Europe. It talks about how they imported cheap labor from Europe and China and from all over the world. Why did they import cheap foreign labor? To drive the American standard of living down, to drive our wages down. So these people work in these sweatshops for half the price that Americans will work. The only difference is then and today, and by the way, this book was published in 1899, which is just, 10 years before the League of Nations came in. and World War One?
It actually goes to 20 years. The League of Nations came in about 1919.
So about 18, 19 years before the League of Nations, they were doing the same thing they're doing today, and the people still haven't caught on. The only difference is today they're exporting our industry to the cheap foreign labor and the Lebanon cheap foreign labor to our borders. And in those days, they didn't have the technology to ship our industry to the cheap foreign labor, but they brought in cheap foreign labor to take away our industry. So it's the same thing in reverse. Nothing has changed.
Well, of course, now, of course, we have their records. I mean, certainly through the Earth Charter, written by Gorbachev and Maurice Strong and Stephen Rockefeller, they've laid it all out. What they want to do is equitable distribution of wealth within nations, equitable distribution of wealth between nations. So they're simply transferring our wealth to other nations. And if we can once get people to understand what's going on, and that they're going to lose their homes and their cars and their children's future and their future as part of a diabolical plan by evil men, at that point, maybe, hopefully, they may wake up and join us in this epic struggle.
You know, I'm going to say something but I'm going to be careful how I express that. We have, I know, like you said, you know, you read some of the articles that we have and some you don't read. There's some I don't read either because we balance a little bit with a couple of writers that are pro-Bush. But we have one, which I'm not going to name, and he's got a heart of gold. This guy's a real, real decent guy. And I'm going to mention this story for a reason today. I mentioned to this particular person about the North American Union. All the Republicans will never allow that. I said, you're kidding, it's all there. Ah, no, I can't believe that. But when something happens to him personally and nips him, it stabs him in the back, all of a sudden he sees corruption in the courts because it affected him. And anything that affects him, he sees that there's corruption there, but as long as it didn't affect him personally, he doesn't see it. And that's how human nature is. I realize that's how people are. Until it affects them personally, until electricity goes off, and supermarkets are empty, and it affects them personally. They will, and as long as a Social Security check is in their savings account every month, or the check comes in the mail every month, they don't see anything wrong. But one day that's going to disappear, and your money will be totally worthless. I can tell you, I know this has been said back before Y2K that this is going to happen. It hasn't happened, but it will happen. It has to happen, because you cannot keep printing money or creating money out of thin air and create a huge monolith of debt without the whole thing collapsing. You just can't do it. It has to collapse. And the real estate market around the country is collapsing already. It used to be down in Southern California, where I used to live, a seller's market. I mean, seller could basically just put on the market and buyers come in and each guy outbid each other to see who's going to get the house. Not anymore today. It's all going down the hill, and it's going to go down the hill more. So what we have is this prosperity and this stock market going up and everything, the whole thing is just to create a certain illusion until they get certain things accomplished, and then the illusion will come off and then you'll see reality. And that's just, I guess they've been doing this, in fact they've been doing this for thousands of years. This is nothing. The Roman Empire did that too. If you ever studied your Roman Empire, and I love to watch the History Channel, and I see it, they did the same thing. And the only difference is now they've had 3,000 years of reading and writing, and they mastered it down to a science, how to manipulate human mind and human psyche and human nature.
Well, of course, one of my favorite quotations comes from Cicero, who said, the budget should be balanced, public spending should be limited, the arrogance of officials should be certainly reduced, and certainly aid to foreign countries should be curtailed, lest Rome become bankrupt. And of course, that's exactly as it is today, except they killed Cicero and Rome went bankrupt, and then, of course, they went from being a republic into a ruthless dictatorship. They became, of course, the Roman Empire. And there are people here who really want an American empire. I mean, it should be obvious we want an empire. We have troops stationed in 130 nations throughout the world. Why do we still have troops stationed in Germany 60 years after the end of the war, in Japan 60 years after the war? Who are we protecting them from? Or are we using that to control those nations? Paul, go and pick up the story.
Well, you know, I don't know what else to say anymore except nothing is new under the sun.
I think somebody already said that.
Yeah, it's a cliche, huh? It's what I would recommend those who don't have the coming battle to call Dr. Stan's number. I think everyone has your number. Get that book from Dr. Stan and read it because it's not very hard to understand. It's pretty easy reading, even though Mr. Walbert is a little intellectual, and there's a few parts in there in the middle of the book that are kind of hard to understand because of all the figures and this and that. But, you know, basically 80-90% of the book, it's really easy to understand. And I mean, you can see when you read that it's the same thing today, that it just goes, I mean, one generation exposes this, and then the history is forgotten, and it repeats to the next generation, and the next generation, next generation. And I was just thinking here, you know, since we got still about 45 minutes left, Stanley, my wife and I were talking about the other day about a feudal system and how long it has been going on, and we realized that back in the Middle Ages, they had what they call castles, and the landlord that owned all the land, probably within a 1,000-mile radius or 500-mile radius or whatever it was, lived in there. And then the peasants lived in this little village out, you know, throughout the country, little villages. And I was thinking, well, why did this guy, this landlord, live in a castle? Why didn't he live in a village with the folks, with the common folks? Because he was robbing them. And obviously the guy living in a castle didn't grow any food, so he used the peasants to go out into the village, and the taxes were corn and wheat and soybeans and cows because he had to eat, and the only way he can eat is off the folks. And it's the same thing today. The only difference is instead of living in a castle, to live in a courthouse. And it's still the same, and they're still robbing you, and you work your tail off, and you pay 50% in taxes, and they live off of you. And it's the same system as it was 600 years ago with the landlord and the taxes. And then he recruits the cops and the tax collectors and his army from the people. And the people go in there, and they sell their soul for this guy for a paycheck, and they work in to protect the king or the landlord or whatever he was called in those days. And they go out and they rob their own people when they came from their own people. It's the same thing today. Nothing has changed. The only difference is it's more sophisticated. I don't know when the people are going to wake up. When the people aren't going to wake up, it's just beyond me, Stanley.
Well, I think the important thing is to realize that at one time we had limited power of the government, and so that way the people of great wealth really couldn't control, they couldn't control everybody. But once they were able to begin to centralize power in government, and this is the reason that people of great wealth want socialism, because socialism is a wonderful theory, but it doesn't work without force. Somebody's got to be in charge. And if you can, of course, negate our constitutional concepts and centralize power in government, who do you think is going to control the people? It's going to be the people of great wealth. That is why they push socialism. In contrast to what everybody imagines, socialism is not going to redistribute their wealth. It's going to redistribute your wealth.
Absolutely.
And until people understand that these people really want a feudalistic system, call it what you will, it is basically the institution of a feudalistic system by which the few control the masses under government. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Paul Walter. His book is The Coming Battle. It was written 107 years ago by Mr. Wahlberg. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And one of the great battles that was taking place back 170 years ago was the effort to have money backed by silver. In other words, there was only a certain amount of gold, and if all money was based upon gold and silver and there wasn't that much gold, then you couldn't expand the economy. The advantage of having silver-backed currency was that you could begin to expand the amount of money so there'd be more money for more people. And as our economy was growing and we were having more people, we needed more money. And the people, the bankers, did not want them. They wanted to control everything. And so there was a great battle that was going on at that time between Williams Jennings Bryan, who was the Democrat nominee for the presidency of the United States on three separate occasions, who wanted to make a legal tender based upon silver. Well, actually, of course, Jack Kennedy wanted to do that, too. And you remember that Jack Kennedy put out a executive order to have a silver-backed currency, and you know what happened to Jack Kennedy. People say, oh, well, they wouldn't have killed him for that. Well, no, they killed him for a number of reasons, but that was a very strong reason, because immediately after after Kennedy was assassinated, White Lyndon Johnson did away with that executive order, and then eventually took us off the silver-backed system which we'd had. They do not want anything behind the currency, so what it collapses, why, of course, you out there in the listening audience will lose everything. That's why you have to understand what these wicked people are up to. They've done this thing for many years. They understand money. Money is the very essence of everything that goes on. As somebody, I think it was Timothy in the Bible, who said money is the root of all evil. It is not simply money. It is the love of money. It is the misuse of money. Money can be used for good or can be used for evil. Unfortunately, today, it is being used to purchase the loyalty of the American people. But one day, they think they'll find their loyalty is misplaced. What are your thoughts on that, Paul?
Well, you know, when you said earlier about so-called socialism, see, people love socialism. It's natural, and I'll tell you why. Because as they take... See, the government doesn't produce anything. The people out there produce the goods. They take raw material and they manipulate it into things. They take wood and they make furniture. They take a piece of ground and they grow food, carrots and wheat and soybeans and corn. So they produce things from the earth. Then the government comes and takes them. Now, take a guy that's got a dairy farm. So you milk your cows. And what does the government do? They take your milk, they take off the cream, and they give you back 2% while they eat the butter. You got the 2%, and you think, gosh, I'm so grateful the government is so nice to me. They give me things. They give me welfare. They give me this and they give me that. Where do you think they got the money from that they gave it to you? They took it from you in the first place. So that's why socialism works. People love to get...
Of accepting the money, of course, you give them your loyalty, and they're buying our freedom with our own money, is what you're saying.
Exactly. We are losing our freedom with our own money. We are funding our own destruction.
Amen to that. Well, let's go to Carol, who's calling from Kentucky, and it's rather late back there in Kentucky, isn't it, Carol? What, about to push in 1 o'clock?
Well, I stay up late and listen to Dr. Stanley Monteith.
Well, thank you so very much, Carol. It's good to hear from you.
The coming battle, I bought from Ed Griffin. And your books and material is advertised in Newswatch magazine,
right,
which is in the 2003 issue. And there is just a whole slew of books that I've been reading for 6 years. Pretty bad scene out there.
Well, all we can do, Carol, is try to read.
Keep on keeping on.
Our job is to try to get people to think, and you know, while they're still time to actually change it.
Well, it could be scary if you didn't know the solution.
Amen to that. Well, of course, we know the Lord. Our job is to get to our best and understand that there's a spiritual battle behind this, and we do our best, but we have to rely upon Him. Did you have a question for our guest this evening?
Well, you said you bought the book from looking through old books. I wonder if you have ever subscribed to the Newswatch magazine.
Yes, I have. I've taken it in the past. I don't know. Do you know Newswatch, Paul?
No, I don't.
All right, fine. Yeah, I've taken Newswatch in the past.
Right. And this one is talking about the enemy within our gates, and he sure is.
You're absolutely right.
Right.
In fact, they control the gates and the moat and everything else there.
Everything.
But our job is, of course, to get the truth out. You certainly want to get my latest newsletter, which is the August newsletter. I just finished today, and that's exactly what we talk about there.
Right.
Who controls the government and what they're doing and how this ties into what happened on 9-1-1. Hey, we're going to have to take a quick break here if you want to stay on your
Well, I will. I'll write for that. And
hold that thought.
You.
Hold that thought. Okay, Carol, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, I know you're having the Freedom 21 meeting in a couple of weeks, and I have a videotape of Terry Hayfield, and they talked about him. We had a Freedom 21 rally up here in northern Kentucky, and I wonder if you would like for me to send you Terry Hayfield's videotape.
Sure, we'd love to have it, Carol.
I'm going to send it to you.
God bless you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, that's Carol back in Kentucky, and she's been at this game for a long time, and it's about it's pushing 1 o'clock back there, so we appreciate her staying up late to hear, listen to us. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, we've got two stations in Kentucky. One's in Lexington, and the other, of course, is actually over in Cincinnati, but it gets 50 or 75 miles into northern Kentucky. So we're fortunate. We've got people there in upstate New York listening, and people, of course, in Detroit and Flint, Michigan, and really in Tennessee, and all across America through the miracle of shortwave or Internet. Well, Paul, you know, of course, we see this thing unfolding, and it's so hard to get people to realize how bad things are when everything appears to be so good. I mean, there's this appearance of prosperity, and especially when the stock market goes up. Of course, it's going to fall after the election, but it's going up now, and everybody feels good when the market's going up. And of course, they don't understand. I think they find it so difficult to believe that all of this is manipulated. Don't you think that that's true?
Of course it is. In fact, people are really not that stupid, because I had someone, I was at a gas station yesterday, and I gassed up, and I said, gosh, you know, your gas is coming down a few nickels. I said, that's great. He said, yeah, he says, the guy that's pumping gas, he says, yeah, he says, that's because the election is coming around, and the Republicans want to get reelected. He said, but watch, soon as November is over, he said, it'll go back up again. So, here was this guy pumping gas. He saw that.
And I think he's probably a lot smarter than a lot of our college professors who honestly believe that it's all a matter of the market and, price and cost and, cost and supply, I guess it is. Anyway, of course, it has nothing to do with supply. It has to do with the manipulation. When you understand that, it makes a lot more sense than these theoretical ideas that they teach in college that have very little basis in reality, because they do not teach our students and maybe even our teachers about the invisible government that holds the reins of economic power, controls both political parties and our reality.
Absolutely.
Well, this is Arthur Stan, our guest this evening, Paul Walter, his book, The Coming Battle. And if you'd like to get it, of course, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, if you'd like to give us a call here, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And Paul, would you like to tell us, our listeners, about your website, about some of the exciting articles you have up there?
Well, like today we have on an article by Bill Sizemore, and that's a very important one, even though he talks about the issues of Oregon. The article is called Insurgents Credit Insurance Credit Scoring Scam. And it's excellent. And what the insurance companies are doing, and I know this is in every state because he was telling me this morning that he's getting emails from all over the country about this. They take your credit rating. And this one particular guy that didn't have, I guess, a very good credit rating because he pays everything cash, doesn't owe anyone anything. And I know there are people like that out there. If they can't afford the cash, they don't buy it. So they don't have, huge debt and credit cards and all this. So they don't really have credit established, and I know a lot of people like that myself. So what they're doing, he pays triple what everybody else pays because they go by credit rating. So if your credit rating isn't a certain height, isn't high enough, and it's below a certain point, you pay double the price, and they presume right away that you're not honest because your credit isn't high. So that's what this article is all about, and it's very good, and it'll be up another 30 minutes. and it'll go down in 30 minutes because it gets replaced with tomorrow's articles in 30 minutes. But you can still scroll down a ways, about two-thirds down, and you'll see Bill Sizemore there, and the article is called The Insurance Credit Scoring Scam, and read that because it's very, very good. Bill is one of the excellent writers. He has a very unique way to express himself, and I like the way he expresses himself because it's very clear. He's got very nice language the way he expresses himself. And what we did is my wife got the same letter that he was talking about, so since we had that letter, I scanned that letter in so people can see for themselves that what Bill was talking about. We just took out, we just whited out the, you know, the person it was mailed to, but it's a generic letter, and they mailed, I guess, computer generated, and each person that receives it has their own name on it, so we just took that off. But it's a, it is an excellent article. We are, we have
Will calling from Missouri. Let's go ahead and take Will's call, and then we'll get back to the latest articles up there. Hi, Will. Did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I certainly have questions, Dr. Stanton. I couldn't have two more intelligent people to ask the two. Paul, I've listened to you from many times on many broadcasts, and I really appreciate your point of view and your research. But the question I have to ask is in regards to this being election year and also the plethora of people that hold appointed offices and boards, councils, and commissions. What would be quality questions that we could put in our cartridge belt now to ask them to help to convince them, people, I'm talking now about people who are, persons who are in positions of authority, power, and responsibility, to help them to see the light why we don't want to continue to accept federal or state grants and aid?
Okay, what I would do is how I would handle that. Now, don't forget, a lot of these people that are accepting these grants are accepting these grants for several reasons. One is they think it's free money. Two is because the people will probably vote down on taxes. They're tired of it. So, you know, in order to fund certain things, they have to resort to grants. And that doesn't make them bad. A lot of these people are good people. They just don't know any better. So what you have to do is, the way to approach them is get educated on this grant and find out exactly what this grant is about that they're about to take. And then present it to them and just say, John, listen, this grant does this. And if you accept that, you have to do this. And when you do that, you see this will lead to that. And that's how we're losing our country. And gently present it to them and then walk away. Because don't force it on them. Because if you force it on them, human nature is to rebel and do just the opposite, take more of grants. So what you have to do is gently present it to them and leave it up to him. And hopefully he'll make the right decision. If he doesn't, well, maybe he'll fall flat on his rear end one day with this grant, and then he'll remember you and he'll say, gosh, you know, I remember Joe told me about this. I should have listened. And the next time you present a truth to him, he'll be more apt to listen. When you go there, you have to go there humbly. Don't approach these people who are in government with an angry spirit or a, you know, like, you're a jerk and I'm this and you're doing everything wrong and I know what I'm doing and he doesn't, because you're not going to get anywhere with them. In fact, they're going to dig in more to what they're doing because they're going to see you that you hate them. So you have to have what the Bible calls love for these people and present it to them as gently as you can and walk away. I do that with the city council. I print out articles. They wanted to fluoridate our water. And I told them, and I had articles written how different cities around the country, for example, quit fluoridating water and stopped that because it was poisoning the people and how bad this was. I present them the newspaper clippings, I present them the articles, and I present them books written by doctors and health experts that expose fluoride and how bad it is. And you know what? They never did it. They never fluoridated the water here. It never came about. They changed their minds.
Because it's amazing what one or two people can do.
Absolutely.
And I think that what Paul says is absolutely correct. But, you know, I think that the question, another question you might ask would be, do you believe in the Constitution? Did you swear an oath to uphold the Constitution, you know, and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic? And, of course, every public official has. Then he would say, well, where in the Constitution is this sort of grant from the federal government authorized under the Constitution? I mean, have you read the Constitution? Have you studied the Constitution? Do you realize that, of course, this is a means of buying your support? This is a means of bringing you under control. You know, there's no free lunch. And if the government gives you something, the government's going to take something away. The government is not there to help. The government is there to control. And if you get people to understand that since we've turned our back on the restrictions placed, you know, on what government does by the Constitution, we see this ever-increasing growth of government. We see this ever-increasing control of government. And what we need are politicians who have the courage to stand up and say, we do not want your money. In fact, what we want you to do is obey the Constitution and let us keep the money here so we can take care of these things rather than having you take it back to Washington, D.C. and keep three-quarters of it and then give us the paltry crumbs from your table. And with that comes the controls that come with any government grant. So all you can do, Will, I think the most important thing to do is to try to educate people on the Constitution. And this is why, as you know, if you listen to our programs regularly, every month we have, of course, David Whitney, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, recommending three times a month on one of our programs, people get a kit from the Institute of the Constitution, begin putting on these programs. We have to educate the American people about this amazing document, the Constitution of the United States, the Declaration of Independence, and certainly the Bill of Rights and the Federalist Papers, which are the very foundation of our nation. As we abandon them, why, of course, we will eventually lose all of our freedom. We've got to get people to understand the basic foundation of our law. Most people don't. And that's why we're losing our freedom. But I will tell you that the people, the elitists, understand it, and they hate the Constitution because it limits their ability to control our lives. And when we take their grants, why we actually accept their control over our local government, and step by step, they're eroding our freedom.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan, and thank you. Thank you, Paul.
You know, we have in our city that I live in, seven on the city council. Five are really good people. But as you get to know them and you study them and you watch where these people are coming from, two are extremely wicked. And the two are influencing the other ones. So what you have to do is you find out which one is the wicked one, and then you work on the other six. Don't work on the wicked one because you're not going to change him. Work on the other ones, but don't sit there and badmouth the other guy. In the back of your head, you know what that guy is doing. You just leave it alone. All you do is just present the truth. And eventually they'll catch on to him themselves. And it works. And the other thing that you people can do out there is, I've said this before lots of times, if you have a manageable county that's not overpopulated, it's kind of rural, run for office, get 50 of you to run for the same position. You can legally do that. And have fun doing it. Don't all belong to one group so they can't label that group and then you all fall together with that group. Work each one as an individual. And run for office, run for the same city council, even if there's 10 or 15 or 20 of you, one of you going to get in. And when you get in, then you do what's right. Now, once you get in, I'll tell you what happened here to a couple people in the past. They'll turn on you. You're this, and you're radical, and you're an extremist, and you're this. You have to deal with pressure. You have to learn how to deal with insult. You have to learn how to deal with this stuff. Let all that roll off of you like water off a duck's back. In one ear and out the other, nothing sticks in between. You got to be a Teflon president like Ronald Reagan was. And don't let anything bother you, no matter what these people say. He said, well, come on, Joe, you can't really believe this. This is the truth. And you keep sowing it over and over again. And you know what? If you stand your ground and you do it in a dignified manner, you'll bring the other ones on your side, too. And pretty soon, you're going to control the city council, and the whole thing would change, and all the wickedness, the wicked people will fly.
Amen to that.
And it works.
Well said. Anything else, Will?
No, thank you very much. What wonderful words of advice.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Okay, well, once again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Paul Walter. The book is The Coming Battle. It's available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Well, you want to tell us about some of the other articles you have up there.
Okay, we got, by the way, one more thing I'd like to add to that. Don't ever give up. Don't ever give up. And if you fall flat on your butt, just get up, brush yourself off, and do it again.
Right.
And one day you're going to succeed. The new writer that we just took on is an Idaho State Representative, Phil Hart. He just joined us today. Today is his first article up. Now, tomorrow, we got an article up that, in fact, it's going to be up in 15 minutes. It's by Coach Dave Dobermeyer. He's one of my favorites. I like him because he's kind of like a, I told him this already to his face. He reminds me of a little kid. He writes like a little child. He just sees things with an innocent eye, and he just expresses himself, and he comes across so innocently. And I love his writings because it's unique, very unique. You're going to like his writings. And his article is up today talking about the Constitution. Since we're talking about Constitution, you're going to enjoy that article. And he tells folks from how he sees it, and he's right. A lot of people say, well, Constitution is there to protect the freedom. No, Constitution doesn't guarantee you any rights. Constitution is there to protect you from government. Constitution is there to put government in check, to tell them what they can and cannot do so they didn't take your freedom away. That's all Constitution is there for. It's not there to guarantee any rights to you. It's to leave you free and to bind the government with the chains of Constitution so you're free to create your own fortunes and your own lives and all that. That's really what the Constitution is about, and he expresses himself very well. And his name is Coach Dave Dobermeyer, and his article is going to be up in 15 minutes.
All right, very good. And, Chris, in other words, you got to go back to work right after we get off the air here.
Well, we're up till about 2, 3 in the morning here every day. I'm at this 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I can't take my wife on vacation. We can't do anything. But you know what? We live in the boonies. We live in a beautiful place. We have 5 acres, and it's like being on vacation anyway, so...
Well, I think, you know, that fortunately you can able to do that. There are a few of us who can spend full time in this battle, as some of you have to work for a living. I'm retired. I'm an orthopedic surgeon, retired now, so I can spend full time at this. And I feel that I'm called to do this. And I feel that Paul is called to do this. There's a handful of people out there working full time. There are a lot of people out there who support what we're doing. Don't have the capacity to do it, but at least they can talk to others. They can encourage them to go to newswithviews.com and pull down those articles. They can learn how to present the facts as Paul has so eloquently described. And I think he's absolutely right. If we could convince the public on simply the matter of fluoridation, that they are destroying the minds of their children. And in the areas in China where they have water and the fluoride in the water, they have children, a lot of children, about three times the number you'd expect with an IQ down in the 70s. But they have no geniuses. They've lowered the IQs of all of those children. And the people in government who are pushing this know that. Now, the scientists of the Environmental Protection Agency have frantically been trying to tell the people, because of the degree of control over the media, why, of course, they can't get the word out. But our listeners, you could go up on the Internet to their website, the Union of the Scientists and the Lawyers and the Engineers who work for the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, that passes on the fluoride, and go to their website, NTEU280.org.
You know something, Stan? Here, about 10 years ago, we had a couple wicked commissioners. We got rid of them since. And they were both socialists. What they wanted to do, and I know this may be in your county out there listening to this too, if you have a diesel spill, let's say, on your ground, they wanted to come on your property to see if there's any diesel or any kerosene spills or any chemical spills on your property. You'd have to dig that ground up. They were going to build a huge incinerator-type equipment to where they can, what they call, remediate the soil to get rid of all the chemicals out of it, and you could take it back and dump it back on your ground. So here they wanted to care about the earth to make sure that it doesn't have a diesel spill, and then they put fluoride in your water. So on one hand, they tell you that you have to protect the environment. On the other hand, they turn around and poisoning you with chemicals, and they tell you that you need to remediate your soil. It is hypocrisy. It is insanity.
It gives hypocrisy a bad name, Paul. But again, that website is NTEU, that's National Treasury Employees Union, NTEU, National Treasury Employees Union, 280.org. Go there. Pull down their articles, and then put them together, staple them, it's not that much, and then distribute it. If you don't have them, I will send them to you free of charge if you request that information from the EPA. But this one issue, if we could get people to realize that they're intentionally poisoning our children. They want to destroy their minds. And these people say, oh, well, we would never hurt children. And I would say, you know, they'd say, who would want to hurt children? And I would say simply, why, we've killed almost 50 million children from abortion. Don't tell me there aren't people who want to hurt children. Of course there are people who want to hurt children. There are people who are really evil and wicked out there. I mean, they've killed almost 100 million from malaria since we outlawed or banned the use of DDT back in 73, not because it was harmful, but because it was saving so many lives. When you understand what we're up against, these people are not stupid. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. Again, our guest has been Paul Walter, his book, The Coming Battle, available from Radio Liberty. And remember his website, newswithviews.com. You go there, you start reading those essays on a regular basis. Well, Paul, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I've got some other good news, Stan, is we've got, I'm heading into the direction to where we're adding a lot of police officers on our website. I don't mean just a regular police officer. I mean huge hitters like police chiefs. And we have one guy, his name is Greg Evenson. He is the former Kansas State Trooper. He was a Secret Service agent in the White House for, I think, a year. And this guy's got credentials. And when he speaks, people who are in uniform with badge on, they listen to him. They won't listen to me, but they'll listen to him. And he's saying the same thing I'm saying. We're also going to be adding, and we're working on this now, and it looks like this may be materialized soon. We're going to have a man that's going to join us, and I cannot give you the name because it may not happen, but it looks like it will. He was 20 years teaching in a police academy cops of how to basically look at the people as the enemy, like we're all the enemies, and you can only count on another cop, you can't count on the people. And he's going to blow a whistle on this of what they teach cops at the police academy. And he was a 20-year instructor at the police academy. And this man has a heart of gold. And he was referred to us by another police officer that's writing for us. So we got a lot of good things coming. We got people with credentials, so you can print this out. And obviously his bio is impeccable. You can take this to your pastor or to your city council, and I know that ink may be expensive, so you print one copy out, then you go to the printer and make some black and white copies at Kinko's, and, you know, pass it out to your city councilman and wake up other people, wake up your neighbor, do whatever you can, turn people on to Radio Liberty for Dr. Stan Show, turn people on to newsreviews.com, and we'll wake them up for you.
And, of course, the thing is that, you know, this is how we're building up an audience. I can remember when you started out, how many hits were you getting a day? I can remember you.
No, you started with one. And that was me.
Hey, pardon?
I started with one hit, and that was me.
Yeah, but I've seen over the years it gradually building up, because I remember when you were getting 75 or 100,000 hits a day. A million people a day are going to this website.
That's all over the world. That's not just the United States. We get hits from all over the world.
And so, you know, but what you can do is introduce this website to others. Tell them about it. Newswithviews.com, newswithviews.com. Great articles. And, of course, the more people we can get being educated, the sooner we're going to take America back. Paul, I want you to get to bed, get a good night's sleep, because we're going to be doing a program tomorrow, and you're going to do the last half of it.
Yeah, I hope I can handle that.
You'll be all right. Good night. God bless.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and once again, I have to remind you, Radio Liberty's listeners supported, and we do hope many of you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us continue doing what we do. Don't forget about our all-day seminar on the 29th of October. And, of course, if you're coming from another area and you need a room, why, you need to know within the next couple of weeks, because they're going to actually stop the block of rooms at a special rate at, the 28th, the 29th of September. So we need to know right now whether you're going to be coming, or if you're going to be coming, why, come and at least let us know, and let us know if you want to get a room reserved for one or two nights. And, of course, we do hope that you'll bring others. We need to get a good turnout. We're going to have a great program. I always enjoy the program, and at the end of the program, at the end of the day, when it's all over, nobody usually wants to leave. They just want to stay there and talk, and because, of course, we need, of course, to know that other people are out there and involved, and there is a small cadre, but it's a growing group. And sometimes the people are on the left, and sometimes the people are on the right. Doesn't matter whether you're right, left, Republican, Democrat, a liberal or conservative. We all want to preserve America. Now, we believe there's a spiritual battle going on, and we hope that perhaps through our ministry and through our approach we'll bring some of these people to that final point where they're going to have to turn their life over to our Lord. But if they're not Christians, and they'll still help us as far as getting the information out, well, that's great. And who knows, perhaps something we say or perhaps something you say can change the life of another person for eternity. And, of course, we always like to ask that question. You know, if you were to die tomorrow, where would you spend eternity? And if you were to stand before the gates of heaven tomorrow and you were to be asked, why should I be admitted? What would you say? I mean, why should you be admitted to heaven? Certainly not because you've been a good person. Who among us has really been good and has not done some terrible things during our lifetime? I know I certainly have. Things I regret and will always regret, but fortunately we have a Savior. And we have the promise of forgiveness for those who believe. So certainly we hope that many of you out there will begin to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle, being waged on a political and an ideological and a cultural and financial and an educational battlefield. It's a battle for the souls of men, and unfortunately we, at least in the past, have been losing that battle, but I think we're beginning to make headway as more and more people begin to understand what's going on. I think what's happened with 9-1-1 has been a tremendous awakening. People's eyes are beginning to open. We have some great four-tape sets called 9-1-1 Update, if you haven't seen them, they're four-tape sets. There are lots of great videos out there. We carry, of course, In Plain Sight, put out by the Dave Van Kleist, Joyce Riley's husband. We carry one that few people have seen, but I think it's one of the best ones. It's called The Day That Changed the World Forever. The Day That Changed the World Forever. It's got a footage in it that nobody else has shown. You'll actually see Gary Hart, Senator Gary Hart, addressing the emergency meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations on the 14th of September, 3 days after the attack, an emergency meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C., and talking about how this incident could allow the president to bring about a new world order. And ladies and gentlemen, that's got to be very important because somebody has changed the transcript of that CFR meeting I have off the CFR website, and they simply deleted Gary Hart's message, but you can see this, the clip of that Gary Hart saying that, and the other thing he says, on the day that changed the world forever, or the day that changed America forever, a great DVD, and there's so much information out there. If you haven't read Paul Thompson's Terror Timeline, and he goes, of course, into the background of the military exercises held that morning, certainly we hope that you'll get this information and get it to others. If you want to get into who finances this whole movement, the book is called The Devil's Game. That's The Devil's Game. And, of course, how the CIA official admitted they were involved, that is, of course, the book entitled See No Evil by Robert Baer. All available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great big beautiful blue globe floating through the void of God's creation. It is Wednesday, the 13th of September, 2006, and I had no idea. Got back last night from New York and from Washington, D.C., and yes, it's sinking in all over the country, across the spectrum of 9/11, of folks that were affected by 9/11 one way or the other. They know irrefutably that that line in the sand is there, because for them, it has been crossed. This is Dave Von Kleist.
And Joyce Wiley. The line has been crossed many, many places. It's what are we going to do about it, and how much are we going to take of this?